you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to Behind Enemy Lines, a Go Tigers 247 audio podcast. Listen in as we go in depth with beat writers that cover Tiger opponents. What's the vibe around their team? What are the matchups to watch out for? Who will win the game? All these questions will be answered. Now, let's get to the show.
Welcome back to Go Tigers 247's Behind Enemy Lines. This is week number five, episode number five. The Tigers face off against conference foe, the Temple Owls. And I'm excited to have Ryan Wallen. He is the beat writer for OwlsDaily.com, the 247 affiliate for Temple University. Ryan, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you, Kenny? Appreciate you having me on.
I'm good, man. I'm good. How's the weather up there?
Starting to get that fall weather, you know, a little brisk air in the mornings now, a little bit of a brisk breeze and through the evenings. But, you know, it's been, you know, nice low 70s, high 60s most days. So, you know, that's just nice northeast fall weather.
That sounds lovely, man. It was so Friday was like 70 degrees here in Memphis. Sunday was like 70 degrees here in Memphis. Today's 80, something like that. Saturday morning, it was 92 degrees. In Memphis on game day. I'm telling you, man, it was like 115 degrees down on the field against North Texas. It was so hot. I'm so ready for the fall weather, man.
Yeah, that's just too hot, especially for a game day, man. You this is the time of the year, you know, fall football's in session now. That nice fall weather to be rolling in and that nice little brisk air.
We need it. That brisk air is nice. There's nothing like a brisk Saturday morning on a football field. It's the greatest.
It is.
So tell me, how long have you been with Owls Daily?
I've been working for them since 2015 was my first full season. I did a little bit with them in 2015, but 2016 was my first full season covering. Obviously, that was Temple's conference championship year led by Matt Rhule in his final year at Temple, and PJ Walker and Tyler Medakevich and all them, you know, those Temple greats that had built that program up to being that championship team that year. So, you know, I've seen the ups for Temple and I've seen the downs now in the last couple of years, but, you know, hopefully with the Stan Drayton era now taking full effect at Temple, that a turnaround's in the near future.
So, yeah, you mentioned, you know, obviously the last couple of years have not gone the best for Temple, but a big coaching change this year. The Temple Owls brought in Stan Drayton, who has, I mean, you look at his resume, man, and it is just, I mean, NFL, you know, quality running backs in college that he's coached. You know, what was it like? You know, what kind of infusion of energy has Stan Drayton brought to the Temple program?
Yeah, you know, I think at first people weren't thrilled by the hire because you look at his resume and yeah, he's produced some talent, but the biggest thing that he had been missing was he'd never been a coordinator or a head coach anywhere. You know, he's always been a position coach and people were a little skeptical of that at first. And can this guy really be the guy to turn it around, especially after, you know, you hire a proven guy in Rod Carey, who had built Northern Illinois into a consistent winner in the MAC, and that route didn't work out, you know, and now they're, you know, this had to be the right hire. So, you know, you don't want to set Temple back 10 years to the mid 2000s and all when they were pretty much irrelevant in the MAC and nearly shut down the football program. So, you know, that the fans want that this to be the right hire, and Drayton ultimately was the guy. And, you know, he's done so far what everybody has expected. You know, he's instilled that Temple tough culture back in with the Owls. He's relied on that. He's relied on player coach relationships, really building that trust between the players and himself, especially after the, you know, revolving door of coaches that have been in and out of Temple since Matt Rhule left in 2016. And, you know, he just wants this team to be the team that saw success in those 2015 and 16 seasons. He wants them to play insanely good defense. You know, defense wins championships in his eyes. And even though he's always been an offensive guy, you know, he knows that that's a key part of the recipe and seeing success. But he also wants to see Temple be a team that's going to ground and pound. They're going to run the ball. They're going to play old school style of football and hopefully, you know, reap the fruits of those labors and win games and wear teams down in that type of game.
So, you know, with Temple fans and yourself as a beat writer, you know, what has been missing over the last couple of years? Like, what would you diagnose as, man, this has been the issue that the Temple Owls have faced? And listen, man, this is what I'm seeing right now. In the first four games of the year, the Temple Owls sit at 2-2. We're seeing some growth, some change, some maybe a culture shift. Like, what were those things? And have you seen a change in that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing, and you kind of saw it in the first year under Rod, and this is not a knock to Rod because, you know, 2019, they were successful. They went 8-4 in the regular season, you know, went to a bowl game, ended up getting killed by North Carolina. But, you know, they still ultimately had that 8-win mark and they were competing for a conference championship. But you started seeing some shimmers of the team would quit late in games, especially if they would start going down or they would give up big plays. And it was kind of unusual because, you know, you were thinking this is the same team that, you know, last year they were playing out of their minds on defense. And now like there seemed to be just quitting and the offense started fading a little bit. And you were just like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's a schematic thing. I don't know if it's just players not buying in. But nonetheless, you know, the 2020 season, obviously the COVID year was, you know, it is what it was, you know, and that we didn't look too much into because Temple had such practice restrictions with being in the city of Philadelphia. You know, they weren't allowing the team to practice as a full group. They were only letting so many people on the field at a time due to the city's restrictions. So, you know, I could see why maybe that season didn't go as well as what people had hoped. But then when you saw those trends carrying over into last year, it was really concerning. And especially when the team started getting blown out consistently. And, you know, aside from the Memphis game, the team looked awful in conference. And I mean, they weren't even competitive, lost seven straight games by 20 plus points. And, you know, that's just not what Temple was about, and that hadn't been about in, you know, 15 plus years really since before Al Golden took the program over. So, you know, it was just something that you possibly thought then maybe was players were quitting. Rod lost the locker room, and from what I heard, it was just that really like there wasn't that connection between the coaches and players that ever fully, you know, developed to the level that it needed to be. And the buy-in wasn't ever fully there. And that seemed really like what it was. And, you know, people got discouraged and there wasn't a fight, but now, you know, you've seen it already this year that this team has fight. And even though that week one loss to Duke, you know, they lost 30-0. This defense came out in the second half and only gave up 6 points in the second half after being down 24-0. You know, they fought in the second half and played their tails off. Same against Lafayette. They played really well. Defense fought its tail off despite, you know, being in some bad positions, backs up to their own goal line, you know, sometimes, and they forced field goals rather than touchdowns there, you know. And Rutgers last week, nobody expected them to be in that game. Rutgers was a 17-18.5 point favorite over the Owls, and, you know, Temple came out and played right with them, really outplayed them for the most part in that game, and probably should have won if there wouldn't have been a couple of, you know, miscues on offense that cost them that game. So, you know, Temple could very well be sitting at 3-1 right now heading into this game. And I don't think many people would have expected, you know, the Owls to be at 3-1. I mean, I had them at 2-2 coming into this game against Memphis, but, you know, I think just by seeing the type of fight that they've putting up, the defensive effort that we've seen so far, you know, some creativity on offense, I think that has exceeded the fans' expectations so far especially going into conference play.
You know, it's an interesting matchup between Memphis and Temple. The current record, they've played 7 times. The current record is Temple is leading the series 4-3. You look at the history of the Memphis and Temple series, it's loss, win, back and forth between the two teams. Does it not kind of feel like that doesn't really matter the records of the teams or whatever? When they play each other, it is going to be a dogfight. Does it not feel that way to y'all up in Temple?
Yeah, you know, Memphis has always been like that type of game. And I can remember, you know, even going back to my freshman year, you know, cold night in Philly, it ends up being, I think, a 13-10 game where Jake Elliott kicks the game winner.
16-13.
And that was a 16-13, yeah. So that was a dogfight game, you know. The next year, Temple goes down to Memphis after having started the season 7-0, you know, ends up losing that game. Or I believe after the Notre Dame game, they have a letdown against Memphis down there. That one hurt. And it's just, you know, it's been a back and forth, like you mentioned, in the series. And, you know, last year, like I said, Temple probably had no reason to beat Memphis last year. And I have no clue they made Dwan Mathis look like Peyton Manning out there on the field in the game, because, you know, now Dwan's not even a quarterback for Temple anymore. He's a wide receiver. So it's just been that type of game where, you know, Temple sees Memphis as a team that they have to come out and, you know, go toe to toe with, because Memphis has always been one of those schools that's favored usually towards the top of the conference every year. And I think they elevate to that type of play because they know Memphis is such a good program, has consistently been such a good program in the conference since the conference, you know, started. And aside from that 2013 year when they were both kind of at the sewer, but they both kind of rose at the same time and then have kind of played each other, you know, tough ever since.
I'd be remiss to not kind of go back a little bit to 2019. You know, that was the year that Memphis was, you know, they won the AAC championship, played in the New Year's Six Bowl, but there is one game that blemishes that season, and it was the Temple game, where we lost, or the Tigers lost to Temple 30-28. There's a super controversial call in that game. That still, I mean, there's still hashtag Joey caught it tweets going around Memphis. Was that as big of a play in Philly as it is and as it was in Memphis? Did y'all talk about that play?
Oh, I mean, they talked about it because it was such a close play, and I still don't know to this day whether he caught it or not. I mean, obviously, from the perspective of a Temple beat writer, you'd say he didn't.
Right.
It looked initially like he didn't, but I mean, the more you looked at it, the more you could make an argument that he did. And, you know, referees are going to be referees. I mean, that's such a tough position to be in. But the unfortunate thing was that that determined the game ultimately. And that was such a good game.
It was such a good game, wasn't it?
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you hate for officials to decide the outcome of a game like that. And that's just the unfortunate truth of how that game ended. But, you know, that was a game where, you know, Temple, again, Rod Carey, his team played outstanding, and he had them prepared for Memphis, and it just seemed like that was his team that he could beat in the conference all the time was Memphis. But other than that, I mean, he struggled, and especially against those upper echelon teams like UCF, like Houston, those teams were just the ones that he somehow had them prepared for.
You know, it's interesting if you know, as a person who covers the University of Memphis, you know, you have to say Joey caught it, and it looks like, you know, not to harp on that play from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, but, you know, when you have to slow something down to, like, you know, 30% of the original speed to find out whether or not he caught the ball, you can understand why, you know, whether you are on the he caught it or not caught it side, where, you know, people are going to be split on that. But again, it's just another example of those games that Memphis and Temple play against each other that is just a dogfight the entire time. You know, it's just a dogfight. But, you know, you mentioned Mathis and how, you know, he's been a thorn in the side of Memphis since he's been at Temple. But now he's not the quarterback. It's EJ Warner, freshman EJ Warner from Arizona. What has he been like this year? What kind of a player is he? And what should Memphis fans expect from the Temple offense this season?
You know, EJ, obviously having come from the pedigree of his father, Kurt Warner, you know, he's a guy you would anticipate knows the game. And that's what Coach Strand-Drayton has said, that EJ knew the offense before he even got to Temple. Like, he had done that much studying, that much work of Danny Langsdorf's offense, that he knew the offense coming into fall camp when he arrived in July. So that just tells you the type of work ethic the kid has, the type of, you know, pedigree he comes from, that he's a student of the game and he's going to do whatever it takes to, you know, improve his game day in and day out and week in and week out. And so far, you know, since he came in that second quarter against Lafayette, you know, he's just had a composure about him that is well beyond his years. He's a kid that, you know, he's not afraid to stand in the pocket and get hit. He's a guy that's going to stay in there an extra second just to deliver the ball to where he needs to be. And he said that this past week after the game against UMass, that he just knows that that's what it takes to be a quarterback. And he has all the abilities to be a successful college quarterback. And that's just something that you don't see, especially from true freshman guys that are 18 years old and were playing in the fall or playing in the spring, you know, 9 months ago.
Right.
You know, or 6 months ago, you know, that it's just unheard of. So he's obviously excelled expectations. I mean, he's had his fair share of mistakes already. I mean, this past week against UMass in the first half, he had some rusty throws and there were some mistakes there, but you know, you're going to have those types of growing pains with a freshman quarterback. But the best thing about him was that he put those mistakes behind him. He bounced back. He led Temple to a key touchdown right before the half against UMass to put them up 7-0. And then late in the game, he dropped a 50-yard dime to Adonicus Sanders right down the middle of the field that, you know, put Temple up 28-0 and really put that game out of reach. So, you know, he has those mechanics. He has pretty decent arm. He's got a very quick release. And like I said, just the composure and his knowledge of the game, I think because of growing up around the game so much, has just really impressed a lot of people.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You know, I think Memphis is in the same, you know, was in the same boat last year with Seth Hennigan as a starting true freshman starting quarterback, which is not normal in a conference like the American, but you know, it's the same kind of deal. You talk about EJ Warner and you hear what your description of him and just reminds you a lot of what Seth Hennigan was like as a freshman, a kid who you know, came in as an underdog in the quarterback battle with the competition with Grant Gunnell, but you know, came in the first week and clearly had a grasp on the offense. And his biggest thing is his ability to think and his ability to process and not panic out there. And obviously as a 18-year-old kid had a strong throwing arm. It's the same kind of story as what you're talking about with EJ, where, you know, the day his high school, Denton High School, won the state championship in Texas on one day, and literally that night drove to Memphis and was on the field the next day for Memphis in the quarterback competition, you know, at the University of Memphis. And now we're talking about Seth Hennigan as a, you know, true sophomore quarterback who has taken those leaps and bounds that we thought he would take this year. What, you know, obviously the Temple defense is always tough and always, you know, hard to score on and just a grinding type of defense. What concerns you about the matchup between the defense with Temple and Seth Hennigan as the quarterback for Memphis?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that concerns me with this week's matchup is that Temple hasn't really faced a quarterback that can really throw the ball since that Duke game. Riley Leonard for Duke started the game 15 of 15 for, I believe, 234 yards and two touchdowns in the first half. So that was not obviously a good sign of what was to come for that game. But, you know, when you have a quarterback that can pick apart a defense and that can read a defense and can deliver the ball on time where it needs to be, you know, that concerns me a little bit because for the most part, Temple's secondary is very unproven. You know, they have a redshirt freshman in Jalen McMurray, who's really their number one cornerback, who saw very limited action last year before redshirting. He earned a single digit this offseason, meaning, you know, he showed something as far as leadership and ability to the coaches. But, you know, he's not been targeted a whole lot because I think there really hasn't been any guys that have been able to target him. You know, there's opposite him, they have Elijah Clark, who's a guy who's been notorious for getting burnt during his Temple career. So, you know, that's a concern, obviously, especially with Memphis having a group of very solid receivers, very tall, quick receivers. You know, Clark has height, and he has some speed, but he just doesn't sometimes make the right reads on routes, and he just gets beat over the top, and that's obviously a concern. And, you know, Temple's rotated some other guys in there. They rotated some guys in there during the Duke game, and they didn't really fare much better. You know, South Carolina transfer Dominic Hill, he came in, he had some penalty issues as far as getting flagged for PI because he was, you know, kind of running a step behind everybody. So, you know, maybe not adjusted yet fully to the speed of the type of play that some of these AAC teams are going to run against them. And, you know, they have an injury in Diane Hawkins, who's kind of the number four corner right now, who he missed this past week. So who knows if he's going to be ready to go this week. And after that, they have a converted safety who's now playing corner in Corey Palmer. And we saw very limited action of him this past weekend. So aside from McMurray, really, you know, it's a very unproven corner group. Cam Ruiz is the veteran of the bunch. I mean, he played a lot last year, but he's more of the nickel guy. And Keyshawn Paul, who was also a starter last year under Rod Carey, you know, he kind of fell out of graces with the team, really, and he's kind of very far down the depth chart at this point, so it doesn't look like he's going to see very meaningful snaps, you know, if any. Just a guy that hasn't earned his way back onto the field yet, so it looks like right now that the Owls are going to roll with Clark and McMurray as their corners, and the safety play, you know, has been better this season, but again, you know, that they missed some tackles in that Duke game that led to big gains, and that's what really allowed Duke to pull away there in the first half and really put the game on ice before halftime. So, you know, it'll be good to see against, you know, like I said, a talented group of Memphis wide receivers, tight end, you know, how they utilize that. And obviously with Hennigan being the quarterback that he is and an accurate one at that, you know, with completing 67% of his passes, what that's going to look like come game day.
So you mentioned the cornerbacks for Temple being maybe a source of concern for you in terms of, you know, how they're going to handle being targeted by Seth Hennigan and the receivers group. But, you know, Temple is known for their defensive line and have two pretty fantastic defensive ends on the team. Tell me about them and what your expectations are for the defensive line versus offensive line matchup.
Yeah, now looking over the stats beforehand, you know, I've not seen a whole lot of Memphis this year, but the number that stands out to me right now is that Hennigan's been sacked 10 times. So that I do see is where there is an advantage for Temple as far as their defense is concerned, considering that Temple right now is third in the country in sacks, already have 15 on the season in that regard. So they've gotten to the quarterback. And, you know, Stan Drayton said today during his presser that is a testament in part to the secondary also, you know, doing their job and covering receivers and allowing those defensive linemen to get to the quarterback and get them and wrap them up. And not only that, you know, they're also fourth in the nation in tackles for loss. They have 36 tackles for loss on the year. So they have created pressure, and that's something that last year they really were not able to do on a consistent basis. So, you know, I'm not sure the two that you were referring to, because Temple has a pretty good slew of defensive linemen right now. I'm going to go ahead and fathom a guess that Darian Varner is one of the guys you were mentioning. You know, Darian Varner, he's a guy that, you know, came into the season with people saying that he had a complete 180 attitude change from the end of last year, and not really know what that entails, because last year he led the team in sacks with 3. And just saying that in itself, that the leading sack guy on Temple's team last year had 3 sacks, that should just tell you how bad the pressure was last year. But, you know, he's a guy that came in with this new staff. He bought in immediately. He dropped 35 pounds, I believe. He was playing around 290 last year. He's down to about 260, 255 right now. And he's just been a monster. You know, he's a guy that finds gaps. He, you know, gets to the backfield. He creates pressure. You know, he's a good run stopper for being a smaller guy on the defensive line now. But he looks like he could potentially be that next Temple defensive lineman that ends up going to the NFL in a couple years. You know, when you wear that number 9 on the Temple defensive line, that means something, because guys like Matt Ioannidis, who's with the Carolina Panthers now, Michael Dogby, who's with the Arizona Cardinals, you know, those are guys that had worn that number 9 before. And then that means something at Temple. So you have some high expectations to live up to when you wear that. And I think so far he's lived up to that, and he's really become a leader in that defensive line room. But, you know, they have guys like Demarek Morris, who's another guy that's really stood out this year. He's been a really great run stopper for them. Zach Gill is a leader on the defensive line. You know, he didn't earn a single digit that like we thought he was going to this offseason, but, you know, as a rotational guy, he's played very well. He's a big body in there, has just a body that looks like an NFL guy. And then, you know, Jalen Satchell's been another guy that's really stood out. Came really out of nowhere, was very under recruited, and again has really bought into this system, put on a lot of weight this offseason, and he earned himself a starting spot ahead of Zach Gill, who was, you know, a graduate student. So that should just say, you know, a redshirt freshman beating out a graduate student, that should just say something, you know, about how far he's developed under this coaching staff.
Absolutely. You know, I think you look at the biggest concern I think the Tigers have coming into this game, and throughout the whole year, has been their offensive line. You know, they've obviously given up quite a few sacks, haven't really been able to get the run game going the way that they have in the past. But another part of the concern is coming out of this North Texas game, two of their starting offensive linemen are day to day in Austin Myers and Jonah Gamble. Now, you know, from the beginning of the year, the Tiger staff has talked about, you know, having 7, 8, 9 offensive linemen that can fill in those gaps, that can switch positions, that can, you know, basically putting out the best players possible. But anytime you come into a game against a defensive line like Temple has, with two of your starting offensive linemen day to day potentially out with injury, it can create some anxiety, I think, for Tiger fans. And that's a big deal. You know, I think that's a big matchup to look out for. In terms of the Temple offense versus the Memphis defense, what are some of the matchups that you are looking forward to see on Saturday?
Well, I'm stemming off what you just said, I'll go back to the defense just real quick, and then I'll transition. So, you know, it's just not the D-line with Temple now. It's kind of the linebacker. That whole front 7 now is just a has been monstrous this year. You know, DJ Elliott, new defensive coordinator, who had seen mixed success, you know, throughout his coaching career at Kansas and Colorado, or, you know, Kansas and Kentucky and whatnot. You know, he had seen mixed success with his 3-4 simulated pressure system, but, you know, so far in the AAC, you know, it looks like it possibly could end up doing something to shut some of these up-tempo teams down because of the type of pressures that they're bringing. You know, it's very similar to a defense that Georgia runs, It's able to, you know, shut down the run, and that's what it really thrives off of, is, you know, shutting down the run and being able to force teams to beat you through the air. So, you know, I'm intrigued to see how that's going to play out this year, especially with the linebacker play that's we've seen so far from Temple, especially Leighton Jordan and Jordan McGee. But going to the offense now, as far as the matchups there, Temple, very similar to Memphis, has not been able to get the run game going. It's been atrocious, stating it simple as fact. You know, they're pretty far down the list in the nation. I believe they're 121 in rush offense right now, averaging 91 yards per game on the ground. So, you know, that's something that's really struggled and has not really, you know, taken off like Stan Drayton had hoped it would. And that's going to be a problem, especially when you have a freshman quarterback. You know, you're putting a lot of the pressure on him to now make plays if the run game can't get going. And so I'm looking forward to seeing how that transpires as far as that, because, you know, Memphis obviously is not the greatest run defense team, but also not the worst. So right. Temple's played worse run defending teams this season, and they've still not been able to get it going. So that concerns me a little bit as far as that. Temple's offensive line play has been very inconsistent. You know, they've been solid defending, or, you know, blocking the pass, but again, run blocking has been subpar at best, and they've not seen that consistency along the O-line. You know, they've started different combinations up there. They've shuffled some guys around, and I think they're just trying to find that best five combination so that they can finally muster up some consistency in the run game there. But, you know, we've seen guys like Adam Klein, who started the year at right tackle, missed a game. Now he started at center this past weekend against UMass. James Famine is a guy who's a Houston transfer who played very little at Houston, came in, started the Duke game at right guard, but now he's now the right tackle. So there's just been a whole lot of shifting around of guys, and you would like to see, you know, maybe a consistent five go out there for once and put forth an effort against a Memphis defense in that regard. But I'm intrigued to see personally how Temple's receivers do against the Memphis secondary, because Memphis's pass defense has not been great so far this year. They're last in the conference in pass defense. EJ Warner obviously has the ability to deliver the ball where it needs to be, when it needs to be there. So I'm intrigued to just see how Temple attacks the cornerback, you know, the secondary in that regard, because yes, he's a young guy, but are they going to let this become a shootout with Memphis? I doubt that. I think they're going to, you know, have to rely a little bit on EJ managing the game, kind of like Kurt Warner was famous for doing, you know, just being a game manager. You know, he just got to put the ball where it needs to be. They need to score more consistently, and maybe they're going to have to rely on EJ in that regard because of the lack of run production that they've seen so far this year. So I want to see how that matches up as far as Temple's receivers against the secondary.
Does it concern you if Temple is not trying to get into a shootout with Memphis, and they're expecting EJ Warner to be a game manager? Part of that game management can't come from just, you know, mid-level passes, mid-level. It has to go through the running game. Does it concern you for Temple if they have to rely on the running game to try to stay out of a shootout with Memphis?
No doubt. You know, I thought last week would be the week finally that happens, because you were playing a team in UMass that relied so heavily on the run. So they were going to milk some clock, and you needed to be able to counter that and, you know, score some points. And they, for, you know, the first 30 minutes, they were not able to do that. They only put up one touchdown, and against a UMass defense that was very, very inferior to what, you know, you would expect the types of teams that the American is going to produce. So that does concern me in that regard, especially if Temple would get a lead. You know, you don't want this game to end up being a 45-42 game, you know, anything in that regard if you're Temple, because you have a freshman quarterback, you have a shaky O-line, you don't have the run game. You know, you don't want that type of game to be played. I mean, I think you want this to be more of an old school style of football game, and that's what Temple's kind of relied on so far this year. You know, they did so against Rutgers, and that's how they were able to stick with them there. They just have to be able to have some more consistency offensively in order to hang with Memphis. And, you know, the defense is, again, going to have to play a very solid game from start to finish. They're going to have to tackle. They're going to have to not give up big plays. And that's thankfully been something that they've not done the last 3 weeks. But again, the talent level at Memphis is different than that of Lafayette, UMass, and Rutgers.
So as you look at the, let's say hypothetically, Saturday night or Saturday afternoon, the game is over and Temple has won the game. What is the stat, the statistic in the box score that you're going to be looking at and going, this is the reason why?
That's a good question. I think what it's going to come down to is mainly the fact that Temple's going to have to control the clock. And, you know, I think sometimes time of possession doesn't matter in that regard, but they're also going to need to have the time of possession in their favor, as well as you got to see something on the box score that shows that they scored when they were over the 50. You know, you can't have these drives where Temple is moving into Memphis territory. They get, you know, on that verge of field goal range, long field goal range, punt range, and they just turn the ball over on downs and keep giving Memphis free possessions that way. And Drayton so far has been very aggressive in his fourth down calls because he says he has so much faith in that defense. But, you know, at some point that's going to come back to bite you. So I think in that regard, you need to have your efficiency in offense, especially when you go into the red zone. You have to score points, and it's going to need to be touchdowns against Memphis. You know, I don't think you're going to win this game with field goals. It's just not that type of Memphis team. You know, I say it's not going to be a shootout, but I mean, it's not going to be a 20-17 game either. I just don't envision that. I think Temple's going to need to put up, you know, somewhere in the mid 20s, high, maybe low 30s to compete in this game, or even have a chance at coming away with a win. But, you know, right now this is the type of team that you need to do it against. You know, this is what you're going to get the rest of the year. You're going to get consistently good teams week in and week out, where, you know, we saw last week that Navy beat ECU, and I don't think many people saw that coming. Yeah, you're going to get games every week where anybody can beat anybody on any given Saturday. So, you know, you need to have that consistency when you cross the 50, especially when you get into the red zone. You need to be coming away with touchdowns. And luckily right now, Temple's offense is the only team in the country that has scored a touchdown every time it's been in the red zone. Both Temple and Memphis are both 100% in the red zone this season as far as coming away with points. So it's going to break, I think, on Saturday for at least one of the teams. So that's the stat I'm looking forward to the most.
It's such an interesting matchup. I know Vegas has put out a line that, you know, says that it's not going to be a close game, but history is history, man, right? Like, history is history. And, you know, I know Tiger fans are after, especially after the North Texas and Arkansas State games, are in desperate desire to see a blowout win, to see the offense click and the defense play well. But we know the matchup between Temple and Memphis. It's always a dogfight, always tough. And I'm excited for it, man. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. You know, it's Temple's conference opener this year, this Memphis' second game against the AAC conference opponent. And it's going to be a fun game, man. I'm excited for it.
No doubt. And, you know, I thought the line when I saw that was misprint. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it ends up being – you know, Memphis 20-point win, but it also wouldn't surprise me if Temple hangs with them the whole time. And, you know, I could see this end up being, you know, a one-score game going to the fourth quarter. It could be Memphis blows them out. It could be this is the week that Temple just puts everything together. You know, it's so hard to predict what's going to happen because, like you mentioned, there is just such an interesting comparison between these two teams right now. If you look at the stats and the style of play, and even though they're contrasting styles, they're kind of like in the same regard. They have the same concerns heading into the game.
100%. Yep.
So it's really going to be a battle of, I think, the quarterbacks and whose O-line can hold up, you know, a little better against the other's defense.
Yeah, when it comes to Vegas lines, after the first week against Mississippi State and the line came out, it was minus 17, minus 18 towards Mississippi State. I went on Mississippi State's blogs and, you know, in interviews and talked about how that line was disrespectful and got roasted for it. And then it turns out that the line was pretty much right where it needed to be. I refuse to comment on lines anymore.
I won't say in one. That's why I'm saying it. It wouldn't really surprise me because, I mean, I know Memphis has the talent to do it. Obviously, with Hennigan, you know, they have very skilled wide receivers, especially. And like I said, Temple's pass defense against Duke was not good. And if Memphis can put something together like Duke did, I mean, there you're going to have a pretty big win if Temple can't score points, especially if they can't get the run game going, just, you know, establish some consistency and keep this all on the lower end of the scoring, because I think because of the issues you've had, Temple can't put up enough points to win a shootout game.
Well, Ryan, listen, man, I appreciate you joining me. There's a Temple Owl fan that comes over to the Go Tigers 247 boards all the time. And I'm going to be honest with you, he's the nicest person I've ever met. And on the boards, most of the time when opponent fans come over to our boards, it's not a nice and pretty experience for everybody involved, but he's great. I like Temple. I love Philly, and I am excited to see this game on Saturday, man. I really appreciate you joining me.
I appreciate you having me on, and good luck on Saturday. You know, obviously
not too much luck,
not too much luck, but you know, friendly competition, you know, it's all in good fun. And at the end of the day, you know, it is a game, but you know, I've always liked Memphis as far as they're an underdog, kind of like Temple. You know, they're a city school, an underdog, and you know, people have kind of overlooked them sometimes, and Memphis can surprise people on any given day. And you know, people talk about the three schools leaving for the Big 12, but you know, Memphis could have been right up there in the conversation with them, and same as Temple if this was 5 years earlier.
Right. We're moving straight ahead with the AAC, man. Let's keep it rolling.
Yep.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for listening to Behind Enemy Lines. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating wherever you download your podcasts. If you are interested in content all about the University of Memphis Tiger Athletics, hop over to www.gotigers247.com. Also, you can join the Go Tigers 247 family by signing up for our VIP membership.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount+.